driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
Got it.
She
got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation. I'm Mikey Frenelli alongside David Moses and Braden Fulgerson, and we're mixing it up. Colleen Holden joining the table today in the first two segments as a member of our news and sports staff. Colleen, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm super excited to be on this podcast. I just got promoted to the producer
right.
of another podcast, Bird's Eye View, so really excited to dip my toe into
it. I was gonna lead that with the next thing and say you're a BIV producer, so you've been around some of these live shows, but you've never been on the Red Zone before, so welcome in. So I think we're going to start the show talking a little bit about the Redbird recap, of course, with men's and women's basketball. Then we're going to have Colleen share some audio with us about an exciting new story she did. And then in the back two segments, the last half an hour, we're going to do a big game style talk. We're going to talk Chiefs, Eagles, maybe another fantasy draft between David Fulgerson and myself. We'll have to wait and see. But first, let's talk a little bit about Redbird men's and women's basketball. I know a lot of us here were on recent games. I know David and Colleen especially worked on the game last night for men's. And so let's start there. A big loss last night to Bradley, two losses in a row now, and just an embarrassing performance, especially in the first half by ISU. David Moses, color analyst alongside Blake Borgart last night. What went wrong for Ryan Peden and the Redbirds?
Me and Blake use the word a lot, energy. It just didn't seem like the Redbirds had a lot of energy running up and down the court last night. Defensively, they just seemed outmatched. Offensively, they could not. The first 5 minutes of the game, they couldn't even score. And I think even 5 minutes is generous. Maybe it was around six or seven.
I don't know. I was holding the confetti in my hand for about 10 minutes. They were giving up. I gotta give some kind of context.
Go ahead.
I didn't even know this was a tradition, but apparently for the Bradley and ISU home game every year, the fans are supposed to throw confetti after the first Redbird basket, and
they did it probably entire.
They picked a great game to do it because the Redbirds didn't get an actual basket that counted for about 12 points.
The first point that counted for the Redbirds was a free throw.
But by then people had already thrown theirs like two or three times because there was a couple baskets that got called back, and then there was a free throw, and as Kendall Lewis was lining up for free throws, this like in stadium Redbirds guy was like going around saying, "Don't throw it, don't throw it," and then he hits the first free throw, and everyone. it was the greatest moment of the season, despite the losing first half. And then almost everyone was still holding their confetti during the first media timeout, in which they had a kid maybe no older than four go out in the court and do like a promotional thing where he was supposed to get from a layup distance, from a free throw distance. And to my shock, and I was very impressed, the kid really did it. I mean, he was no older than four with a full size basketball and a full size hoop and hit like three shots. And everyone was throwing their confetti for him.
He was the only one that was able to hit a shot last night for the Redbirds.
Literally, you need to give him a contract.
Maybe see what he can do.
But anyway, the game.
Yeah, back to it. Just it was lifeless. I actually substituted the word energy, and I just said talent. You know, Bradley was just more talented. And I didn't say that was the ultimate end goal of the game, which was, oh, we're just going to be outmatched and outclassed. Oh, let's just lay down and take this defeat. No, I said if the Redbirds want to get back in this game, they're going to have to play physical, which they started to do a little bit. They're going to have to score the ball efficiently, which never really happened for them. The Bradley's defense was very, very good, and it translated on offense because they controlled the flow of the game all night.
How do you wait until 13 –
46 left in the first half to score. I can tell you it's because you are completely outmatched by a team. It was the exact same thing as when this matchup happened last week for women's basketball, just the other way around. We are a women's basketball school. Mm-hmm. They are a men's basketball school. You know, you pick your poison and whatnot, but this Redbird team, they're just not it this year. And we know that by now. We've learned that by now. And Bradley's just very, very good. They're trying to set themselves up, too, in the same way that the women's basketball team is for us. They're more focused on being able to set themselves up for these last few weeks before the playoffs can start for them.
But, you know, like, watching them, I've been to about, I think, three or four games over the past week and a half for the Redbirds, and they are talented. Kendall Lewis, I've really started to like him. Seneca Knight, Malachi Poindexter is one of my favorite players for the Redbirds. I think that they have a very good foundation. It's just they were outmatched. They went against a team that was just obviously better than them, and they couldn't stop them.
Yeah. So what's missing to you guys in terms of, like, because we do like some of these key players, these big names that are starters and reliable to get a lot of minutes each game. What is the team missing? Are they missing bench as a whole? Are they just missing the ability to, you know, reliably have a game plan? Do you think that we even know yet what is missing for this team?
Well, you know, one of the things I kind of said in our broadcast last night was that, you know, Coach Peden, he really likes the guys that he brought into this program. He uses them a lot. I think there was a statistic a couple of days ago. Kendall Lewis had played four out of the last five games, the entire games or something, or three out of the last four, the entire games, all 40 minutes. I was like, wow, that is ridiculous. I would love to see him open up the bench more, especially as we're hitting, you know, the later parts of this year. You need more production from everyone. You can't just rely on those big name guys to produce for you every single night. One of the things that Bradley did a very good job at was there were widespread production from a lot of players. And even when their bench came in, they really gave them some pretty good minutes to give their starters rest so that when they came back in, it was like, okay, we're just going to keep going 100 miles per hour. And it was like that for the whole game.
I kind of agree with you, because for the game that Mikey and I called the week prior against UIC, it seemed like ISU was doing fantastic in the first half because they had all those key players that do so well. But then by the time you got to the second half, oh, well, UIC's been using their bench a lot more, so they've got much more well-rested players just in general. And then Illinois State's been trying to rely on their big names much that they are pretty much out of energy by the time the second half comes near a close.
Well, the bench isn't that deep is the problem.
Yeah, that's why I'm tending to agree with you guys, is that just the bench is too much of a problem right now for them to be able to use anyone other than those big names, I feel like.
Ryan Schmidt is my favorite example. The bench is not very deep anymore. You remember how often he played last year? He played in 31 games off the bench, 359 minutes, started five. I mean, he was only averaging 4 points, but still, I mean, off the bench, he was making significant impact. He had 8 steals, 16 blocks. Now in this year, only 7 games played, hasn't started, 1 block, 2 steals, averaging just under a point. And he got into the game last night, but he's a senior. I know he had a little bit of injury earlier in the season. And we have to also acknowledge the Redbirds' little streak they're on where they haven't been doing the best. Colton Sandich has not been playing either. But just this team is not very deep. I think that's the key. I don't think it's a Ryan Peden thing. I think he's a solid coach. I think I'm excited to see what he can do in the future, but this is not his core roster to go win, you know, win the conference with. A lot of these guys are transfer juniors, seniors. They got a year or two left of eligibility. But yeah, moving on to Redbird women's basketball. That is a totally different story. It feels like every week for the last 2 weeks, as we've been coming in to talk about Redbird women's basketball, we talk about the streak they're on, and now it's up to 10 games. It's incredible. It seriously is so cool. And Kristen Gillespie especially has been saying so much stuff about this team and how pumped she is. You can tell in her post-game pressers just how excited she is about this team. She's seen conference championship teams, including last year, and it feels like something's different with this team. Like, they're just that much better.
Yeah, I think that's the situation that any basketball team or any sports team in general wants to be able to get, where you have a coach that's confident in their players and they know that anyone that they go to is going to be able to get some significant work done and to be able to be that successful and getting your shots, getting space, being able to defend well. ISU is able to keep their opponents to some pretty low scores when they need to as well. I think from top to bottom, this team is a very, very talented team. I don't know if I would say that we've proven that this team is the best in the MVC in women's basketball, but they're easily one of the top teams. They're easily one of the most competitive heading into tournament season. And it's very exciting to see because every single time we get to have a broadcast of women's basketball, I know it's going to be a great show for everyone involved.
Let's hear from Coach Gillespie actually after the game on Sunday, after the Play for K fundraiser.
Said, I just want people to leave here today being inspired how hard we play, how, you know, how much energy we have for one another and how together we are. And I think that we did that. And to me, yes, we won in the stat lines, but we won as a program, and then they raised $46,000. It's unbelievable what our community does and how we step up to help people.
So Kristen, obviously talking about not only raising almost $50,000 for that fund, but of course just being able to do it amid such an awesome streak with such a great team. David, what is it about this team that just really sets them apart?
Everything around the team resonates, and it's trending upward. It's a very positive atmosphere. Hopefully, you know, it does rub off. I'm not saying this is a joke or anything. Hopefully it does rub off on our men's basketball team.
Absolutely.
But it seems like the morale is high in that locker room. The morale is high in the coaching staff. You can see it every game with the passion that the players on the sideline cheer with. They're cheering on their team, and it helps because 10 straight wins. Their last loss was early January. That's crazy.
Colleen, I hate to put you on the spot, but you are a freshman. It's hard to believe because you've done a lot for us already here at Z&D, but is there hype around campus for this women's basketball team, you think?
I would say so. I feel like every time my friends are saying, like, oh, I'm going to go see the game, like, they're going to see a women's game specifically. Like, we really all are, like, very pumped about, like, not just, like, the fact that we have, like, such a great, like, sports team, but the fact that we have, like, such a great women's sports team, which, of course, we'll get into later. But, yeah, definitely I've seen it around campus. And, like, personally, in my experience, like, I've been in the studio for one of the games. I went to see one of them. And, like, something that's really cool about the women's team is that they all just work really well together. And it's very, very noticeable.
Yeah, because a lot, unlike what I was talking about with the men's team, how a lot of them are transfer upperclassmen, this women's team has been together for years. They've, aside from, you know, missing Juju Redmond now, they went to the NCAA tournament last year all together. They've been through a couple of conference tournaments together with Coach Gillespie, with Mary Crompton, Kate Bowman, and the rest of Maya Wong, the rest of that crew.
You know, that could be a precursor for what the men's team could turn into. Who knows? I think when you have a situation like you do now with the women's team, like you said, they've been together for a minute. Familiarity breeds content. They are a very content team, and they play very well, and it shows every night.
I think the only difference that is that big of a deal for this Redbird team from last year to this year has been the addition of Paige Robinson and the fact that she has been able to be the leader of the team despite not having been with this team before this year. She was that key centerpiece that this team needed last year to be able to go further than they did. But to be able to have her now is a really, really big deal for this team because there's no telling how far they could go from here in the MVC tournament and beyond.
You talked about earlier them maybe not being the best in the MVC yet. They might have some competition. Who do you think that competition is?
Well, it all depends on the tournaments and how the rest of this season goes. I think this Friday you've got SIU. That's going to be another tough, you know, rivalry matchup. It always leads to good games between the two of them. And I think that's going to be SIU is 8-13. So they're not exactly the best example of, you know, the leaders of the conference, but there's certainly, you know, plenty more teams, plenty more opportunities to prove yourself even before you get to the tournament. And then once that happens, you know, you're going to be a pretty high seed. So your first round or two are going to be pretty easy as well. You just got to work your way up and build your momentum before you get to those tougher teams in the conference. You know, Drake comes to mind, things like that. I mean, there's just certain teams that you can, have. If you can build yourself up against these easier opponents coming down the stretch, then you will be ready for the tougher teams and get those adjustments that you need to be made.
And what a way to be going into the later parts of the year on a 10-game win streak to really round out just a tremendous season altogether. You think about it, the momentum is high. It's a perfect situation that you want to be heading into. You know, like we said, tournament season's coming up.
I think the team that scares me the most, honestly, is you and I.
Yeah.
That's the one loss in the season, and they have lost again since then, but they are ultimately still in that close second spot. One little Redbird loss could tie them for the one seed here with you and I. And that's the team to look out for. But it seems like in every sport, they also always put together a great team, the Panthers do. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Colleen's going to stick with us. We're going to talk about an exciting new club here at ISU that's helping women in sports. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome back into The Red Zone. I'm Mikey Fornelli alongside David Moses and Braden Fogerson and Colleen Holden. We are going to be talking a little bit about, in the next segment, a new club here at ISU. Colleen, can you tell us a little bit about this? You recently wrote a story on this group.
Right. So I had the pleasure of doing an interview with Emily Lazarevich, who is the PR admin director of the club at ISU called Girls Club. And basically, like, the goal of it is just to, like, provide, like, an inclusive, like, very supportive space for, like, women in sports to, like, express that interest and, like, find new ways to, like, progress their career, their future careers in the field, which is, I feel like it's so important because, like, in the career force, like, in general, like, it's really hard to, like, get any career position over a man as a woman, but just, like, in a male-dominated field, it's so hard to crack open into that those positions, so having places like that and spaces like that is just super important for, like, morale and just, like, boosting the agenda.
Yeah, so Colleen's story can be found on WZND.com under news. It's called Girls Club at ISU. It was published last week, but actually we have some audio of Colleen's interview with Emily that we're going to play for you right now.
In a male-dominated field, a new student-run organization at ISU is looking to narrow the disparity between men and women and break barriers into the world of sports. Girls Club is an RSO created to give women interested in sports a place to express that interest in an inclusive environment. Girls Club board member Emily Lazarevich had plenty to say about the RSO and its feminist strides.
And the goal is to create different, like, outlets and kind of create, like, a community sense because sports is such, like, a male-dominated field. So having this club is really beneficial to have women, you know, get these resources and kind of, like, come together and have their own community.
The progress made historically towards equality for women makes it easy to pretend sexist ideals are a non-issue in this day and age. Unfortunately, more traditional perspectives are still prevalent in today's society and appear in unlikely places.
So the thing that I get it a lot, and a lot of the other women in the club get it a lot, is like, oh, you're a woman, I'm in sports broadcasting, and so, you know, my professors have even said to my face, like, oh, like, you did really well for a woman.
Despite the presence of sexist attitudes, Girls Club has been hit with nothing but positive feedback. However, this doesn't mean there won't be people continuing to perpetuate expired narratives. Lazarevich advises people in these situations to find the power in themselves to go after their passions.
I would say, honestly, just confidence. I mean, even if you don't know what you're doing, or, you know, even if you feel maybe timid or nervous, especially as a woman, I think confidence is, I mean, it's cliche, but confidence is key. Like, going into it, you know, knowing that you're capable of doing anything that a man can.
For more information, visit WZND.com.
So thank you to Emily for sitting down with Colleen to do that interview. And thanks, Colleen, for bringing that on here today. I think my biggest takeaway from that audio is one of the last things she said, confidence is key in that field. Can you go a little bit into detail on that one?
Right. So it's really easy for, like, all the negativity and the disparity between men and women to, like, get into your head. So I feel like just knowing in, like, the deepest part of yourself that, like, you can do whatever a man can do is going to really take you far.
So I really like the whole concept of the RSO. I want to know, what ways can we better educate ourselves on what it is that you're doing and the principles that, you know, this RSO stands by?
So I think the most important thing is just acknowledging the fact that there is, in fact, a disparity in especially male-dominated fields between men and women in, like, those career positions, and just making sure that, like, you are educating people on the problem instead of, like, becoming the problem. Like, making sure that, like, you're not being too, like, you're not pushing, like, these ideas of, like, oh, you did a great job for a woman, just being like, oh, like, you did a great job, period.
Right.
And do you think that when you can have more, you know, exposure for a club like this, that you think that, do you think that more people will be able to join and know that this club exists and be able to be a part of it? And do you think that, you know, that would be, you know, a helpful impact for that as well?
Definitely. I think just being, like I said earlier, just being aware that, like, there is, in fact, a problem is really, really important to solving the problem. And, like, getting that awareness out will just, like, make people more aware of just, like, the disparity that there is. And, like, ignorance is really just the biggest killer in this issue. Like, it's so easy. I think I touched on this in my interview. It's, like, it's so easy to think that because, like, the women's movement has come so far in like the last 100 years that like these issues just don't exist anymore, but just being aware that they do still exist and they are very real, and bringing that to the attention of the public will really help close the gap.
So going to the sports side of it, and what all you're saying is very true, but going to the sports side of it, what did Emily say, or anyone in the club, about what are the events that they run as a club to try and help each other and to try and promote their group?
So they didn't touch too much on like the day-to-day of the clubs, but they have had some like guest professional sports speakers, and they've done a lot of work like looking at like different career positions where like there's different openings for women specifically in sports and stuff like that.
One of the things that drew me to WZND as a whole is my first semester here, it was so funny. I never knew, I always thought this was just going to be, you know, the guys, you know, just speaking with transparency. But then when I saw Cameron Kelly join a call with Leo Stoddard for baseball, I was like, wow. And you mentioned the word inclusion a couple minutes ago. I was like, that is the true definition of inclusion. But I want to also highlight what you said. We have to make this a normal thing. We have to normalize it because it is a normal thing. Girls can call sports. Men can call sports. It should always be something that is normal. It shouldn't be a surprise.
Right, definitely. And I think, like I said earlier, like people really think that like these issues don't exist anymore, but they're in so many places that you wouldn't even expect. Like just going into any career interview, like the interviewer will like be interviewing a man and be like, oh, like he was really confident, versus like a woman will have that same energy and be like, oh, she was really like, she came on really strong.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I did an interview with Leah Johnson, who was the former Illinois State Volleyball head coach last year as part of a Bird's Eye View piece I was working on, she said something very similar. She said she had all of her athletes last season read Abby Wambach's book, the former soccer player, because she talks about – Abby Wambach in that book talks about how if she says she's the greatest, some people will say, oh, she's too overconfident. She's, you know, she's being cocky about it. Meanwhile, you have basketball, football players, et cetera, male players – who are saying, oh, I'm the best, I'm the greatest, and they say, look at how confident he is, look at how awesome he is. So there is that disparity, and the language does have to change. I will say that.
Definitely. I really agree. And I just feel like it all just goes back to, like, what you said, David, about normalization and just, like, being aware that, like, there is a difference and that it should be normalized for, like, everyone to speak the same language and not just, like, having this difference and, like, just honestly just, like, villainizing women who try to, like, get into these male-dominated positions.
And it's also a great situation for us to be in the School of Communication, because that's where, you know, you take classes that, even if you're a journalism major and it's not, you know, right up your alley, like myself when I took it, taking comm classes about, you know, comm 111, for example, you know, the classes about communication studies and what we've been able to learn about how humans communicate. When you have opportunities to learn in that way here at the School of Communications, you can really learn that there are completely different ways that people communicate between men and women, and it helps you be more aware of how you can address that and change it for the future.
You said something in the last part of what you just said, villainizing women, but we also over-worship men.
Yes.
So LeBron James eclipsed the all-time scoring record for most points in the NBA history. And I'm all good with the celebrate. I know that that is probably a record that may not get touched again. But we've also said that before, but let's not get into that. But there were commercials of him and his highlights, and the voiceover of that was someone in church talking about, oh, he's done miracles. Oh, he's impressed thousands. Why don't you witness his greatness? Alluding to saying it was LeBron, when in terms, probably that voiceover was in church talking about God. So we are over-worshipping men, and like you said, villainizing women. It's got to change.
Definitely, definitely. That goes back to like what Emily said during her interview. She was saying like how all of her professor was saying like, oh, you did really well for a woman. Like, it's just like the standards are so much lower for no reason at all.
How does that language change? Because I completely agree. But like, what are the first steps in stopping that from being the norm?
Well, I just think like cutting out like the lower standards altogether is really important. Like, just instead of saying, oh, you did a really good job for a woman, just, oh, you did a great job.
Absolutely.
And like not just making like holding this idea that like women can't do as well as men.
I think it's really cool that ISU has this option. I know it's a newer club for women who are interested in sports or a male-dominated field to be able to have this community. Because like Emily said in the interview, it's just a place, a safe space almost for them.
And I hope that this club not only is a avenue for women who want to be involved in sports or anything that the club may pertain to, but I hope that it also educates men.
Right.
Because like you said earlier, ignorance is a big part of this. And ignorance doesn't have to be looked at as a total negative word. Ignorance, you can genuinely not be educated on something, and that is called ignorant. So I hope that this club allows for men on the campus of ISU to understand what's going on here and normalize it as much as possible.
Right, and I'm really hopeful that, like, change is definitely possible. I think the fact that this club even exists is, like, really started, like, getting into people's heads, like, oh, this exists and it's for a reason. Like, there's a driving force behind it that we need to change something. And, like, coming into WZND, like, I've, like, felt really motivated, like, by all the guys here who are, like, very, very, like, passionate about, like, the equality and stuff like that. And, like, the women in news and sports also are, like, very inspiring, like, altogether, just, like, really, like, sticking through. Like, there's not a whole lot of women in news and sports, and we all just like come together and we do what the men do, and it's really inspiring.
Yep.
You all better watch out. Colleen's gonna be on a lot of baseball games this spring.
That's what I'm thinking too. Are you gonna try and call in any of those baseball softball games for us this spring?
I'm definitely thinking about it. I'm still just trying to familiarize myself with the world of sports altogether. But yeah, I'd love to hop on the call sometime soon.
That would be awesome. I think that's one of my favorite things, men or women, about WZND or experience that we have the ability to let people call sports, learn how to call sports, and sometimes even learn the sport themselves. I learned volleyball as soon as I got to college. I knew nothing about volleyball. And I think there's lots of opportunities for that for everybody in an equal playing field.
I still haven't learned volleyball. What are you going to have to teach me that one?
You've called volleyball before.
There are tons of sand volleyball courts around campus. We're going to have to go not this weekend. It's going to rain.
It's going to be a little cold.
And we've got a holiday this weekend, so two holidays.
There's something going on Sunday. But Colleen, thanks for joining us in this segment. That was really cool. And I've talked to Emily before, actually, because I had a class with her last semester, and she actually discussed, and both of us did, about her joining the show at some point this semester to discuss that club further. So we love that you did this story, though, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, of course. I loved it.
Coming up on the Red Zone, we're going to finally get into the big game for the next half an hour. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Before the show, David Moses was in tears behind the producer stand there. Just so sad that football is coming to a close. The sunset is on the horizon for the NFL season, which is wild because I remember us two and Dane being here, like, just felt like yesterday, talking about week one. We even have a sounder still on there from Russell Wilson. that we might want to play just for old time's sake. Yeah, we used to always play that one during during pick six. I remember I put that on there before week one. It was like our second or third show.
Hey, Sean Payton is going to tell Russell Wilson, you better not ever say that again.
Did you guys see the news about Russell Wilson today? About his charity or whatever?
You know, I did hear something about it. I don't know too much about it.
I don't think it's as big of a deal as people are making it out to be, because I think a lot of charities are very similar, or at least for professional athletes. But people are just looking for every reason to bring down Russell Wilson. He went from a hero to a villain in 1 year just because he had a bad year. I don't understand that. I still hope the best for him.
And it only makes you ask, should he have stayed in Seattle just for his career, pulled a Kobe or something?
He was loved in Seattle.
Yeah, very loved.
No, as long as he continues to fail in the AFC West, I am more than happy to lay off any criticism of Russell Wilson. But
this is honestly like the four stages of grief. So the NFL is going to be fine. They're going to get over it, and he's going to be one of the most loved players in the NFL again. I think the first stage of grief is in denial. The second one is anger. The third one is realization. And then the last one is appreciation. So eventually they're going to come back around and appreciate him.
That was like Tom Brady's entire career, what you just said right there.
Oh, for sure.
27
for
years. Sure. And by the end, people all appreciated him. So you know who's not in the big game? Russell Wilson. We're going to talk a little bit about the teams that are in the big game, and then in our last segment, we're going to do another fantasy draft. We'll talk about that later. But first, let's talk Eagles and Chiefs. I kind of thought all season the Chiefs would be here because they were just the sneaky best team in the AFC the entire year, even as people talked about the Bills and everyone in between. But the Eagles, yeah, they had the record for it, but I always thought maybe the easy schedule would come back to bite them in the playoffs. But as of right now, they're representing the NFC.
I would say that, as you said about the Chiefs, I also expected the Chiefs to be either first or second in the AFC, just because, look, every pundit was like, oh, the Chargers will win the West. Oh, the Raiders will win the West because they traded for one guy. Oh, the Broncos will win the West because they got Wilson. The Chiefs are too good to just give up a division title that easily.
Right.
And you can't make slight changes to when you are facing a team as good as that. It's going to take a lot of changes. And just because they lost Tyreek Hill does not mean that they are not the same team as they always were. But
honestly,
the Eagles were a little bit more surprising just because that entire division was really impressive. They obviously started out better than anyone else, but the Cowboys and the Giants really started out pretty well as well. And so there were some questions maybe midway through the year, I remember, of people saying, like, will the Eagles kind of cool off and will the Giants or will the Cowboys take over? But the Eagles have a really, really good team from top to bottom. So this is a very good matchup.
And you know, how foolish of us to assume that just because Tyreek Hill left this offense that Andy Reid, Travis Kelce, and Patrick Mahomes wouldn't find a way.
Keyword Travis Kelce, I would say.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just, this is in their DNA. Winning is in their DNA. Patrick Mahomes is going to find a way to win. Now, yep. That's not my prediction for this upcoming game, but, you know, I really do think that it's going to be a very good game. Both teams are evenly matched. I think the Eagles have looked scary all year, but when you took out Jalen Hurts, they look like an entirely different team.
Let's do this. Let's save our predictions for the last 5 minutes of the show. Let's keep the people listening. Let's keep them on the edge of their seats. We'll just discuss, because this is really going to be an interesting matchup. And
really?
I know you guys have both said your piece here, so I'll say this. Ferguson said there's no way that Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes would blow a division championship with that division. I don't think they'd blow a championship, period. I think they have that experience. It's going to be a great matchup, and I'm going to save my prediction, even though that kind of alludes to who I want to pick. But I think they, going into it, at least have the edge of my mind, because this team has been there before. This coach has been there before. And Mahomes is truly the heir apparent when it comes to Brady retiring as the best player in the league.
We don't take Mahomes' magic lightly. He is able to do just that. Well, last time we saw him, essentially he was walking on one leg because of his ankle injury. And I'm not sure how his
healing. That is the one thing that's very scary.
But he's had 2 weeks.
Yeah.
When you think about it, he's had 2 weeks. And he did look a lot better in that last game than I intended on seeing, because I he took a hit, you know, again, who was that? The Jaguars, wasn't it? Yeah, and I expected his ankle to be a little bit worse than what it actually was. So, I mean, who knows? 2 weeks of rest could have been very beneficial for him. He'll come out and find a way to do it. But like I said, that's not going to be my official prediction. Like you said, we're going to wait until the last few minutes of, you know, tonight's.
Yeah, these are two completely battle-tested teams. I think that both of them, as I alluded to, came out of a very difficult division with a lot of different, you know, tough opponents throughout. I think the Eagles, in terms of their non-divisional schedule, was definitely, I would say, easier than the Chiefs, but not by much. And the whole idea that the Eagles just won a conference championship by, like, getting the easiest way and the easiest route to get there, I think it's a little overblown, because, for one, the Giants came into that game about as hot as ever. All three of us picked the Giants, which, please forgive us for that.
Yeah,
but
that was bad. You
got to expect an upset. I mean, that was pretty much all of our reasoning. You've got to be able to expect an upset, because there's no way that both of the one seeds are going to come out winning each of their conferences, and if we don't pick an upset of some sort, then we're gonna look crazy when we get
to
this moment.
I didn't want to root for the Eagles all season. Two reasons: I didn't want to root for the Eagles all season because they had an easy schedule, and two, so the Bears don't look as bad next year when they don't do the exact same thing. Because the Bears are in the exact same spot the Eagles were in this time last year. The young quarterback going into his second year has promising stuff, and all they have around him is money and time and
a bad
schedule.
Do not turn this segment into a bear segment.
I'm just saying, because
I can go on for the rest of this hour.
I know you could. I'm just saying. I mean, it's very eerily similar. All the money in the world, a bad schedule, all the time, all the draft leverage, and a Justin Fields comparability to Jalen Hurts.
Let's just hope that the front office handles everything. Because a lot of people in these situations could get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Like, I have too many responsibilities. I have to spend a little bit of this $100 million. I have to make some use of this first-round draft pick. I got to do something to improve this team. But like I said, we're not going to get off into the, to the Chicago Bears situation.
This is probably the last reference of the Bears until, like, September.
You just struck a hard chord on me.
No, we'll have to talk about the draft.
We won't be able to uphold that promise for very long.
Yeah,
I don't think.
No.
How about the Doug Peterson? Like, you drop someone as great of a football mind as Doug Peterson, and you replace him with maybe the only coaching candidate that we could have come up with that you could argue was better than him. I mean, Doug Peterson completely turned around this Jaguars team from a complete failure that was mismanaged for the rookie year of a phenomenal prospect and a legendary, a generational talent, to getting to the playoffs and even winning a game in a huge comeback fashion. I mean, Doug Peterson is still going to be remembered as one of the all-time greatest coaches of this generation of NFL coaches. He's got to be up there for sure. Some of the greatest moments that we've seen in recent memory have been from his leadership. And to be able to replace him with, again, about the only coach that you could argue is maybe better, that's got to be some luck for this Eagles team.
This, and correct me if I'm wrong, if somebody can think of a good comparison in any sport, but this Eagles situation is actually so weird to me. Winning a championship in the last 4 or 5 seasons and then coming back, going back to the championship with, at least offensively, an entirely new roster.
Completely different.
And a new coach, a new quarterback, an entirely new group of receivers, basically. A couple of defensive players are still around. They have a statue of Doug Peterson and Nick Foles on the outside that's only been out there for about 2 years, and now they're back playing for a championship.
Every other team in the NFL probably didn't notice this until Mikey Fornelli just said it on 103.3 WZND at the Red Zone podcast. But really, that's so true. Like, how did Howie Roseman go to the big game with two different teams
within four or five seasons, different coaches? And yeah, I mean, like I said, the construction dust isn't even settled yet on the statue they put out front of Doug Peterson and Nick Foles, and they're back in the big game with an entirely different coaching staff, entirely different team. I gotta tip my hat to that. And even the only comparison I could think of through any sport right now who has done something similar is either like the Boston Red Sox from like 2013 to like 2018 ish or like the Warriors, but even then they still had Steph and Clay, so it doesn't count.
They had
Steve Kerr.
That whole foundation.
The Red Sox might be the only scenario where I see that being similar.
But you know, back to what you were saying, Brayton, about Nick Sirianni, he's a very good head coach. I think that age just plays a very big part in today's NFL. The flashy young guys are what's starting to become more prevalent. You're starting to see even owners who are in their mid-50s to early 60s. And for the NFL, that is an old age. When you talk about Jerry Jones, who, what is he? He's collecting dust right now, probably in his 80s, late 80s at that. So, I mean, age is probably playing a big part in it. You got those young coaches, Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur. That's what the NFL is trending towards, and I think it's going to continue to do that until eventually, but here's a couple of coaches that probably will survive that little, age discrepancy: Bill Belichick, Andy Reid, and like you said, I think Doug Peterson's really starting to solidify himself in Jacksonville as the head guy to be the head coach.
But of course, when it comes to being known as the top dog in terms of NFL coaching, there's no one quite like Andy Reid right now that you have to deal with.
Yeah,
he is at the peak right now. Obviously, Belichick as a whole probably better, but right now, in this moment, Andy Reid is the guy that everyone's probably got to be looking up to right now.
Why is Belichick over Reid? I mean, when you think about it, historically.
Resume-wise,
But like right now, he's not. Right. But resume-wise, he is.
It says a lot the past few years. You take Brady out of that offense, you generally have done nothing. Yeah. What if you went to the playoffs? You went to the wild card one year, and in that playoff game, I think they only scored about 3 points.
Yeah.
And now I know there's been inconsistency with heck. And it's so funny how many topics we have touched in this segment.
In this segment.
Now we're on who's the, I guess,
better coach.
Coaches.
Yeah.
But
trying to get all the football out of the way. This is the last week.
Yeah, this is going to probably be the last time you all hear some football on this podcast.
For a little bit.
Yeah, so you take Mac Jones, Cam Newton, Brian Hoyer. It just didn't work.
Mm.
And now you're kind of in a place where you're considering Bailey Zapp to be the quarterback that leads you.
Does that work? I'm playing devil's advocate. Does that work reverse in saying Andy Reid didn't win a championship with Mike Vick or Alex Smith?
That's a good question.
But I don't, I'm not trying to stump anybody, but I will just say it is miraculous what a quarterback like Tom Brady or Pat Mahomes can help to do to help a coach. And not to say it doesn't work vice versa, because Pat Mahomes would not have been a good Bear under John Fox. Or Matt Nagy for that matter. Even though he's
a disaster.
Yeah, even though Matt Nagy's his quarterback coach now. But no, it's yes. Good coaches and good quarterbacks work hand in hand. They only work with each other.
And check this out. It's going to be so funny in a couple of years when Andy Reid retires and Matt Nagy becomes the head coach of the Chiefs. Because it's going to happen. They've already talked about it. They said, yeah, if there's anybody that's going to take that spot right now, it's going to be Matt Nagy. Matthew Nagy.
Yeah, with three-time champion Patrick Mahomes still under center, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah,
I'll figure it out by then.
I think that
it's a little bit better than Trubisky.
Yeah, very true, because, oh my goodness.
The feeling that I get watching the Chiefs offense now, where it's like I hate this team more than anyone else in the league, and I want them to lose every game I can get a chance to watch them lose, and then having them in a situation where every time they're in like a 4th and 6, I'm like, man, if they don't punt it, I don't blame them, because they could probably still pull this off just about in any scenario. In the first quarter, you could pull off a 4th and 6 every once in a while.
I don't want to.
And I'd be like, oh, I'm scared. Like, why do they – like, that's the same feeling that I got when I was watching that prime Patriots offense, where it was just like, this team can do anything. They can come up with any play they want to, and they can probably be able to pull it off. They can own a zone defense.
I don't want to hate the grade of the Chiefs, and I don't. I know David and I both don't, but we have to look at it from Fogerson's shoes here. It's kind of like if like the Vikings were like really good and they were in a championship. Like, we'd have to be like,
how do you guys feel about the Packers as a franchise?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I didn't want to say the practice jerseys, but I mean, we might have to bring them up.
The Packers have only won one Super Bowl back in 2010, and they've still kind of owned that.
Well, at least in the Rodgers era,
Past decade, and you guys obviously have to completely hate the Packers as a franchise now.
I would agree.
And the Chiefs have been even more dominant than that. I mean, they've won the AFC Championship 3 of the last 4 times, and they've been in the AFC Championship the past 5 times.
No,
I mean,
you're right.
That has been quite a problem for the Raiders to deal with. There's some disdain there for me, for sure.
I get what you're saying. I think you're just mad that they did that little ring around the rosy play. that was embarrassing.
I was laughing so hard when that happened. I'm like, what are we doing?
But no, in all seriousness, coming from a Bears fan who hasn't seen a consistent, you know, year to year, it's still early with Justin Fields, so I'm not going to say just yet that I put my full trust in him to take us to the big game. Oh, just stop it. Coming from a fan who hasn't seen an effective quarterback, you just learn to embrace it.
Yeah.
Embrace that greatness. So, Patrick Mahomes, I want him to...
I will never embrace Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now that I will have to take back, because I know Dane Dreyfus is probably loving this conversation right now. No, I'm not rooting for Aaron Rodgers. I probably will never do that. He does not fall under this category.
And he didn't even hear you just say that, because he's on his 4-day darkness retreat right now.
Oh my goodness. Don't even get me started. Okay, yeah.
Let's end the segment. We gotta make our
picks. That's the last thing we gotta do.
Well, no, we'll do our draft first, and then we'll come back and make our picks in the last 5 minutes of the show. But first, we have to take a break. I wish we didn't have to, because we got so much more Bears to talk about for no reason. You're listening to the Red Zone.
This is Illinois State Winkers Wright, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, Redbird County.
Welcome back to The Red Zone. I'm Mikey Friendly alongside David Moses and Braden Fogerson. And we have a special segment to round out our big game edition of the show. We're going to do another fantasy draft. We did this a couple weeks ago. If you're a regular listener, you might remember with Ben Huddy, we did the MLB offseason draft because we all missed baseball. But now we're going to do our big game draft. So let's talk about what those 5 things we're going to draft are, snake draft style. It's going to be favorite big game moment historically, favorite or dream venue, so it could be somewhere it's been before or somewhere you wish the game could be, favorite commercial, dream or favorite halftime performance, and primary announcer for a big game. So I think we're going to start this one off. Let's do this by age. I think David's last then, because he's the oldest. When were you born?
June 27th, 2002.
Okay, so I was February of 02. So I'm going to be the youngest then, right? No, you are the youngest. I can't think. You are the youngest. So you're going to go first.
Yeah.
You're going to go first.
Okay. Since I'm stuck going first, I'm going to go with the one that I would be the most remiss if I didn't get it. And despite the fact that it's kind of counterintuitive because you wouldn't think of it as being the most important, I'm going to go with my performer pick because the Prince halftime show,
Purple Rain.
The guitar solo, you've got Purple Rain in the rain. The idea that slick of a surface rain, he never slipped on, it was incredible. And there's no way I could go through this draft without taking that one. It was awesome.
All right.
He's been brewing that one up because he talked about that before the show.
See, I'll stick in the same game. I'm gonna get my moment out of the way. Round one, pick two. Devin Hester, you are ridiculous. Opens the Super Bowl. Sorry, the big game with a run back against the Colts.
So I'm going to go with commentators because this group was torn apart last season. And honestly, I've noticed it every Sunday when I see them on separate calls. I would love to see Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth get one more Super Bowl together. I think two of the best announcers in the league. And I'm going to go with them for my announcers.
So you went with Al and Chris on that one?
No, I went with Al Michaels.
Oh, okay.
And Chris Collinsworth.
Okay, yeah, the crew.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, David, you get to go again.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, all right. I just got away commentators. Now, I'm going to go with a favorite big game moment. This probably is going to be my favorite big game was the New England Patriots versus the Seattle Seahawks. I was going for the Seahawks, and I know we know the ending to that game, the controversial 1 yard line, touchdown, interception, Malcolm Butler, that whole game. But my favorite moment in that game, I don't know if anybody noticed, is the beginning of the game, Russell Wilson, he doesn't complete a pass for the whole first half. And then Chris Matthews, I don't know if you all remember him, mm-hmm. just has a total breakout game and goes absolutely bananas that entire game. Every ball that was thrown up to him, he came down with it and, you know, either got a touchdown or over a 30-yard reception. So that's probably my favorite memory because I was really pulling for the Seahawks that year. I was a Russell Wilson fan, and you know, unfortunately, they did not get that.
Chris Matthews and the Seahawks is David's big moment. I could not have seen that coming, but I appreciate the pick. That's a good one. All right, let's see what I'm going to go with next. I had my big moment. Let's get halftime performance out of the way. I don't know if anyone was going to take this from me, but I'm going to go ahead and take it. I want the Foo Fighters on stage in halftime. They would rock it out. And I actually looked it up earlier just to make sure they never did it, like before my time, and they never did. And they have said they want to. They just never have been asked. Dave Grohl was quoted saying something like, "We've talked about it with like our agent before, and then every year they end up picking Katy Perry," is his quote. So I'm going to go with the Foo Fighters finally getting their way, and then we're going to go back to Fogerson.
Okay, so I guess it's a 2-for-1. Just to clarify, for the announcers, do I have to pick two, like a pair of announcers? And do they have to be a pair that's already like commentated together, or can I just like
you
go wild card?
Or you could do wild card pair. You could just do one. You could do a Vin Scully edition.
Yeah, so what I wanted to do for – actually, I'll hold off an announcer. I'll do a wild card for that. But anyway, for my venue – I'm going to pick the Superdome because the city of
Which
New Orleans.
One? Yeah, I was about to say because you know that name has changed
New Orleans,
in Atlanta.
Yeah. Well, it's – yeah. So in New Orleans has hosted the big game more than any other city, including back before the Superdome existed when it was like literally just a college stadium and it was a really, really bad stadium at that because – Mardi Gras already exists, so New Orleans has always been known as being able to really, really handle hotels. So it's a great venue, and the reason that it has always been more often than not the venue, no matter what the shape of the stadium is because that city was made to be able to host an event like that. So I'm going to pick that, and then for my second one, I'm going to go for my commercial. I've got Terry Tate, office linebacker.
That is a good one, actually.
So I'm going to go back to one of the things you just said. I was going to pick, you know, New Orleans as well, because that was one of the fond memories I had as a kid, playing Madden and playing in the big game. And that being the venue for that event for years and years. And I always wondered why they took it away from it. And I think they're coming back in a few years in New Orleans as well. But for me, I'm going to go ahead and take Beyonce and Bruno Mars 2016. for my halftime.
Together?
Yep, they did it together. One of the best. You can't, you know, go over.
You win that.
You can't go over Queen B.
I didn't realize we could make dream pairings, even though you said they did it together before.
Oh, wait. So I don't want to go against the rules.
No. I'm messing with you. You can keep that. You can keep that.
Okay. And then
if they were together before,
it seemed like they were.
Yeah, no. Right, I think they were. I think they were. Yeah, good one.
So, okay. Help me out here. What do I have left?
You need, and we're actually about 5 minutes off from the show, so we're going to hurry this up. We got venue, commercial. Actually, that's all you need, venue and commercial still.
Okay, so for commercial, so I was telling you guys earlier about this funny commercial. Yeah. I don't remember what year this first aired, but there's a commercial where there's a mom, her boyfriend, and her son sitting in the living room watching this big game, and they have the snacks at the living room table. The mom walks out to the kitchen, I guess, to get some napkins or something, and the boyfriend reaches his hand down and grabs one of the chips. And the son gets up and slaps him and says, "Don't touch my mama and don't touch my Doritos." So I'm going with that. Very classic. I don't know if you've all seen that one, but it was a really good one.
All right. So that means I got to pick venue and commercial and announcer. Let's go with venue. I'm going to go with the future stadium of the Chicago Bears, the yet-to-be-named Arlington Heights Megadome. I have no idea what it's going to be named, but that'll be a great place to host the big game going forward.
It's
going to be like Hallis Field.
Yeah, something like that. Hopefully, no, it'll have a corporate
something
name.
Something
corporate. But no, that is going to be the best in the world for the Final Four and the big game and everything under the sun. I cannot wait for Chicago to have all those fun things. And so call that a homer pick, but I cannot wait for the big games there. So I'm going to go with the yet-to-be-named Arlington Heights Megadome. All right, Braden.
For my moment, I'm going to go with the Philly Special.
Yep. Ooh, that was a good one.
It's worth making a statue, as we already said. So yeah. It's worth putting it in my draft. And then the last thing I need to pick is announcer. And so this is my wild card pick. All right. 7 hours of commercial-free football.
Oh,
if
my
you
goodness.
Get Scott Hansen,
that would be great.
As your Super Bowl commentator, I don't think he's ever actually commentated a game, but his voice is great. He's fantastic at being able to focus on as many NFL games as you've got on in any given week. He could easily do a great job of commentating.
Pair him up with like any former player ever. That would be actually awesome. All right, I'm gonna go with my announcer.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the future of CBS Sports. I'm really thinking in the future of this one. I'm going to go Jim Nance and Tom Brady.
Oh, my goodness.
Isn't he Fox?
Oh, I'm sorry. Is he going to be Fox?
Okay, you can say what
I'm still going to just pair those two up because those two are great.
I like that.
Jim Nance and Tom Brady. Let's say Brady doesn't work out for Fox. They want to stick with Greg Olson, and he decides to go to CBS, and there's a spot waiting for him there.
I thought you were going to say the future of CBS, Mikey Fortnightly.
No, I can't do that. Maybe I'll say David Moses.
Oh, no, Brady Forkus.
But that leaves David to pick his venue.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. This is going to be a tough one. Venue. Can I say Field of Dreams again? No. So for the venue, I'm going to probably, I'm a homer. I'll just say Soldier Field, whatever. I'll say Soldier Field.
This is such a homer draft.
Just imagine that.
God.
Driving down Lakeshore Drive.
Are they going to replace the turf ahead of time at least?
No, everybody's going to tear their ACL. It's going to be perfectly fine. And it's going to give every opportunity for my team to win. So it's going to be good.
It did work out in New York. They had it in New York 1 year and it was like, honestly, the best weather you could possibly imagine for February. In New York, so.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that it's not going to be. So you chose New Orleans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can't do that because halfway through the game, I can't have anybody disrupting the momentum of my Bears with lights. We got to make sure all the lights work.
I was
in the
hoping
stadium.
You guys would forget that. Part.
So voters, if you don't know, the stadium that Brayton chose, they don't have reliable lights. They're gonna cut off your team's momentum, and they're probably gonna lose the big game.
I'm gonna go as the last pick of the draft for my commercial. I love that old one from the late 70s where Joe Green. Is walking off the field with his towel, and he gives the kid the towel, and the kid gives him the Coke, and he goes,
thanks, Mean Joe.
And that's my favorite. I think that one's so funny, and it's such a classic that's mine. And I'm looking for the votes from the nostalgia pick. And speaking of which, we're going to post these results on Twitter, on the WZND Sports Twitter, at some point later tonight, so you'll be able to vote. Hudsy won the baseball draft, so please vote for one of the actual hosts this time so we can
that's embarrassing.
So we can actually win, because that is a little bit embarrassing. Okay, we have one full minute here before the show is over to give our big game predictions. David Moses, start us off.
Chiefs. I'm going with the Kansas City Chiefs.
So you made me think in the last segment you were going to go with the Eagles. What made you change your mind?
You know, I just really like Patrick Mahomes. I would love to see him get a second ring. I want to see him stuff the stat sheet and become, you know, what Brady is, one of the GOATs. So I'm going with the Chiefs.
Braden?
Fly, Eagles, fly. And it's not just because I hate the Chiefs, although I've definitely established that I think this Chiefs team is going to make it much closer than a lot of people are saying, because right now everyone's saying the Eagles are the favorites. I think it's a really close matchup.
You think the dog's
ready?
But
I still want to take the Eagles for it.
You think the dog's ready?
Yeah. Jalen Hurts.
Dogs ain't ready.
Jalen Hurts and the Philadelphia Eagles are a great team. But you know what team can beat them when it comes to the big game? The team with experience. Give me Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and the Kansas City Chiefs. That breaks the tie. We'll come back to you next week, and we'll see who was wrong, who was right. Thank you for listening to this edition of The Red Zone.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.